This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel, Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Leviticus. Now, here's Pastor Sandy in Leviticus chapter 14 with today's edition of Sandy Adams Radio.
Verse 33 tells us, "And the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, When you have come into the land of Canaan, which I give you as a possession, and I put the leprous plague in a house in the land of your possession." Now, at the time, the Israelites were in the wilderness. Thus, they were living in tents. But when they enter the land of Canaan, they're going to build houses. And every homeowner knows that there will be problems. Mold and mildew, fungus and bacteria and wood rot and carpet stains. Sound like your house? Some translations render the word leprosy as a spreading mildew. What exactly Moses has in mind here, we're not sure, but he was obviously concerned about any active infection, growing bacteria that might be spreading throughout your house, potentially making the family and the community sick. Verse 35, "And he who owns the house comes and tells the priest, saying, It seems to me that there is some plague in the house. Then the priest shall command that they empty the house. Before the priest goes into it to look at the plague, that all that is in the house may not be made unclean, and afterward the priest shall go in to examine the house." And it's no different today. Whenever you invite the pastor over, you always clean out and clean up the house first. Or you should. "And he shall examine the plague. And indeed, if the plague is on the walls of the house with ingrained streaks, greenish or reddish, which appear to be deep in the wall, then the priest shall go out of the house to the door of the house and shut up the house 7 days." In other words, he quarantines the house. "And the priest shall come again on the seventh day and look, and indeed, if the plague has spread on the walls of the house, then the priest shall command that they take away the stones in which is the plague, and they shall cast them into an unclean place outside the city. And he shall cause the house to be scraped inside all around, and the dust that they scrape off they shall pour out in an unclean place outside the city. Then they shall take other stones and put them in the place of those stones, and he shall take other mortar and plaster the house." You know, it looks like a team from the EPA in protective gear removing the asbestos, you know, from your house. Now, before we go further, I have a question. And I want to direct this question to all of the men here tonight. Who is the priest in your house? You should say, I am. If you're a husband, if you're a father, you are the priest in your house. And as a priest, one of your jobs is to continually inspect your house for leprosy. Have you been doing your job? When was the last time you made an inspection? When was the last time you went into your teenager's room and examined the walls, his posters, and her pictures, and their CDs, and the wallpaper on their cell phone and computer screen, and the music on their iPod? But that's none of my business. It is if it's in your house, if it's on your walls. Hey, any privacy that exists in my house has been granted by me. And I can take it away if I feel that an inspection is warranted. Don't you love your kids enough to root out any leprosy? Don't you love your kids enough to take away the wall rot that might be growing in their rooms? There have been occasions when we've taken a bedroom door off its hinges just to let the infected child know that there is no privacy until he cleans up his act. Hey, if there's leprosy in your house, it's going to spread. I hope you know that. If it's in Big Brother's room, it's going to spread to Little Brother's room. If it's in the bedroom, it's going to spread to the family room. I love my kids. I want them to be clean more than anything in the world. And I am willing to break up stones and scrape mortar and go through drawers and look under beds and read emails and examine phone calls and do whatever it takes to get the leprosy out of my house. That's my job as a priest. If my kids don't like it, they can take it up with God. Verse 43. Now, if the plague comes back and breaks out in the house after he has taken away the stones, after he has scraped the house, and after it is plastered, then the priest shall come and look, and indeed, if the plague has spread in the house, it is an active leprosy in the house. It is unclean, and he shall break down the house, its stones, its timber, and all the plaster of the house, and he shall carry them outside the city to an unclean place. Demolition is the final answer. And I don't want my family demolished because I failed to get rid of the leprosy. I love my family too much to let that happen. And the rest of the chapter describes the ceremony that's to take place after a house that once had leprosy is pronounced clean. And it's the same ritual done for the leper himself. The two birds, the cedar wood, the scarlet, the hyssop, it's the same sacrifice. Verse 54. This is the law for any leprous sore or scale, for the leprosy of a garment and of a house, for a swelling and a scab and a bright spot, to teach when it is unclean and when it is clean. This is the law of leprosy. You know, what we've learned in this last two chapters is that leprosy can fester in three places. In a person, in a garment, remember we talked about that last week, and in a house. And likewise, sin can incubate and grow in a person's heart and in a daughter's wardrobe and in a son's bedroom. So as with leprosy, we need as parents to make frequent inspections in our own heart, in our wardrobes, and in our houses, on our walls. Chapter 15 deals with bodily secretions. You excited? You excited about chapter 15? There is some really interesting stuff in chapter 15. There is some really, this is an oozy chapter. Verse 1. And the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, speak to the children of Israel and say to them, when any man has a discharge from his body, his discharge is unclean. Now, because we're not reading the old King James, we are getting robbed here of a truly incredible pun. Because the word used in the old King James Bible for discharge is issue. And so we could entitle this chapter, The Issues on the Issue. Instead, we're reading about bodily discharges. And this shall be his uncleanness in regard to his discharge, whether his body runs with his discharge or his body is stopped up by his discharge. It is his uncleanness. Now, here is where the Bible was way ahead of its time. It wasn't until 1873. Remember, this was written in 1450 BC. It wasn't until 1873 AD that Dr. Armar Hansen identified the bacterium that causes leprosy. You see, in Europe during the Dark Ages, people believed that leprosy was hereditary. And restrictions on the lepers were relaxed because of that belief. Lepers would even go door to door selling their wares. You can imagine that the disease spread. In fact, the bacterium that causes leprosy is found in high concentrations in the secretions that come from a runny nose. And thus a runny nose was a serious health threat to the community. Now, of course, this is also true today. As a matter of fact, at Calvary Chapel, if your toddler has green mucusy stuff running from his nose, we don't want you to put him in the nursery. We have laws against this. If you do, he'll probably infect the other children. See, we too have laws against bodily secretions. You just didn't know that. And this was the concern really for all bodily discharges, not just runny noses. There were issues with boils and with scabs and with pustulous wounds and with oozing sores and with infected eyes and with fungusy ears and with runny noses and with severely chapped lips and ulcerated mouths. Hey, God cared about the spread of infection among his people, which is the reason here for chapter 15. And these next few verses probably deal with some sort of genital discharge, the result perhaps of a venereal disease, or maybe it was just a simple infection, or it could have actually been a bad case of diarrhea. Well, it could have been. And that made you unclean. But you knew that. Verse 4. Every bed is unclean on which he who has that discharge lies. And everything on which he sits shall be unclean. And whoever touches his bed shall wash his clothes and bathe in water and be unclean until evening. He who sits on anything on which he who has the discharge set shall wash his clothes and bathe in water and be unclean until evening. And he who touches the body of him who has the discharge shall wash his clothes and bathe in water and be unclean until evening. If he who has the discharge spits on him who is clean, then he shall wash his clothes and bathe in water and be unclean until evening. Any saddle on which he who has the discharge rides shall be unclean. You never want to ride on a horse after a guy with diarrhea has just been on him. Whoever touches anything that was under him shall be unclean until evening. He who carries any of these things shall wash his clothes and bathe in water and be unclean until evening. And whomever the one who has the discharge touches and has not rinsed his hands in water, he shall wash his clothes and bathe in water and be unclean until evening. The vessel of earth that he who has the discharge touches shall be broken, and every vessel of wood shall be rinsed in water. Pottery, clay vessels were broken. The wooden vessels couldn't be broken, but they were cleansed. They were rinsed. Notice, though, the importance placed on the washing with water. I hope you understand that the existence of germs and bacteria were unknown even by the medical profession until the 1800s AD. Doctors had no idea how diseases were transmitted. In fact, it was not uncommon for a doctor to go from patient to patient without even washing his hands. I mean, back in the 1800s, surgeons were like football players. The idea was the bloodier you are, the dirtier and bloodier your uniform might be, the more respected you'll be among your peers. Oh, look at him. Oh, look at all the surgeries he's done today. Look how bloody he is. Boy, I want him to be my doctor. The bloodier, the better. Often they would walk into rooms with these blood-scattered gowns just to impress their patients. In fact, in the 1800s, the hospital itself was the greatest danger to the patient's health. Today we have much better knowledge of how disease spreads, and therefore we emphasize sanitation and sterilization. But understand, God knew about this a long, long time before we did. Recently, the American Society of Microbiology did a study on the hand-washing habits of Americans. They observed 6,333 men and women in restrooms across five major United States cities. In fact, the researchers might even have examined you. They might even have watched you because they went to a Braves game. And they discovered that only 64% of the restroom patients at Turner Field washed their hands after going to the toilet. Only 64%. That's why you better be careful who you high-five at a Braves game. Just warning you now. You see, even though it's not always practiced, health officials insist that simple hand washing is still the most important means of preventing the spread of infection. God understood that. God knew that long before microbiology was even an ology. Verse 13 says, "And when he who has a discharge is cleansed of his discharge, then he shall count for himself 7 days for his cleansing. Wash his clothes and bathe his body in running water, then he shall be clean. On the eighth day he shall take for himself 2 turtle doves or 2 young pigeons and come before the Lord to the door of the tabernacle of meeting and give them to the priest. Then the priest shall offer them, the one as a sin offering and the other as a burnt offering. So the priest shall make atonement for him before the Lord because of his discharge. After his cleansing, a sacrifice was still needed." Verse 16, "If any man has an emission of semen, then he shall wash all his body in water and be unclean until evening. And any garment and any leather on which there is semen, it shall be washed with water and be unclean until evening. Also, when a woman lies with a man and there is an emission of semen, they shall bathe in water and be unclean until evening." Now understand, this is a normal, healthy, even sacred sexual encounter between a husband and a wife. Nothing here is being done immorally. And yet this couple is still considered unclean until evening. Why is that? Remember what we talked about last week. We delved into the mind of the Hebrew. And you've got to understand Hebrew culture a bit to really understand what's being said here. It's important that we distinguish, as the Hebrews did, between ceremonial uncleanness and moral uncleanness. You know, there is nothing morally wrong with a husband and wife having sex. In fact, the Bible teaches that marital sex is beautiful and pleasurable, and it's a holy experience. And that's why if you're not married, you need to wait until you are married before you have sex, so that God will bless it and make it all it intended to be. You rob yourself by not waiting for the bonds of marriage. Hebrews 13 verse 4 says this, "Marriage is honorable among all, and the bed undefiled." There is nothing immoral about marital sex. This uncleanness was ceremonial. Now remember, moral verdicts of clean and unclean are based on the good or the evil intrinsic to the act. But ceremonial verdicts were based on symbolism. You see, nothing is immoral about marital sex, but when the Hebrews thought of reproduction, God wanted them to recall that sin had poisoned the fountain of life, that we're born into sin. And to condition them to that truth, God attached a ceremonial uncleanness to all reproductive acts. Again, it had nothing to do with morality. It had to do with symbolism. And so God attached uncleanness to all reproductive acts, ceremonial uncleanness, to teach us that sin has poisoned the foundations of life. It was a temporary uncleanness, but it was long enough to make you think of what God was trying to teach you. Same thing in verse 19. If a woman has a discharge, and the discharge from her body is blood, she shall be set apart 7 days, and whoever touches her shall be unclean until evening. Everything that she lies on during her impurity shall be unclean. Also, everything that she sits on shall be unclean. Whoever touches her bed shall wash her clothes and bathe in water and be unclean until evening. And whoever touches anything that she sat on shall wash his clothes and bathe in water and be unclean until evening. If anything is on her bed or on anything on which she sits, which he touches, it shall be unclean until evening. And if any man lies with her at all, so that her impurity is on him, he shall be unclean 7 days, and every bed on which he lies shall be unclean. Again, a woman's menstrual flow is a natural process. And there is nothing dirty, there's nothing morally unclean about it. Again, these laws were ceremonial. They taught symbolic lessons, figurative lessons. And again, it pointed back to the fact that sin is inherited. It's a result of it's passed down through birth, you know, from the parents to the child. We inherit a sin nature, and thus all reproductive acts were considered, there was a ceremonial uncleanness attached to them. Now, if a woman has a discharge of blood for many days, other than at the time of her customary impurity, or if it runs beyond her usual time of impurity, all the days of her unclean discharge shall be as the days of her customary impurity. She shall be unclean. And remember, this was the problem with the woman in Matthew chapter 9. For 12 years, she had been considered unclean and virtually an untouchable by her family and friends because she had been bleeding. She had an issue of blood for 12 years. In fact, we're told in verse 20 of Matthew chapter 9, and suddenly a woman who had a flow of blood for 12 years came from behind and touched the hem of Jesus' garment. For she said to herself, if only I may touch his garment, I shall be made well. But Jesus turned around, and when he saw her, he said, be of good cheer, daughter. Your faith has made you whole. And the woman was made well from that very hour. Isn't that beautiful? Understand, the law could only pronounce this woman unclean, but Jesus was willing to heal her. Jesus has healed us all of our uncleanness. That's why these laws no longer apply to us today. That's why you are clean in Christ Jesus. Whether you're discharging something or whether you're not, you're still clean in Christ Jesus. He has cleansed us. He has purified us. We are righteous in his sight. Verse 31, thus you shall separate the children of Israel from their uncleanness, lest they die in their uncleanness when they defile my tabernacle that is among them. In other words, if a person was ceremonially unclean, the tabernacle was off limits to that person. Now, this is the law for one who has a discharge. And this is important. Listen to this. For him who emits semen and is unclean thereby, and for her who is indisposed because of her customary impurity, for one who has a discharge, either man or woman, and for him who lies with her who is unclean. Now, here's what he's doing. He's saying that all sexual relationships made a person unclean and therefore unfit for worship and for the tabernacle. And thus, he separated sex and worship in the minds of the Hebrews. And that was so important. That seems obvious to us, doesn't it? But that was important because in the ancient world, in the pagan cultures, sex was intricately a part of their worship. In fact, among the Canaanites, when the children of Israel get into the land, the Canaanites actually visit temple prostitutes. And sex is an act of worship in their pagan religion. And God wanted to separate sex from worship so that that kind of thing, temple prostitutes and immoral acts and all that kind of thing, wouldn't be happening in the tabernacle, in the temple, in the worship of God. Moving on. Aren't you glad? I love cliches. How many of you love cliches? I'm actually a connoisseur of cliches. And it may surprise you how many, I use them all the time, don't I? But it may surprise you how many of the cliches that we use in everyday language actually have their origin in the Bible. Check this out. Escaped by the skin of my teeth. That's from Job 19, verse 20. A drop in the bucket. Ever said that? That's Isaiah 40, verse 15. Whiter than snow. Psalm 51, verse 7. Harder than a rock. Jeremiah 5, verse 3. Blind leads the blind. Matthew chapter 15, verse 14.
Although much of the details you find in the book of Leviticus may be more than you ever wanted to know about sacrifices and blood, there's a reason why God wanted you to know and understand the things written in this book. There were things he wanted to communicate about his purity and his holiness through these Old Testament sacrifices. They pointed to a perfect sacrifice that Jesus would one day fulfill. If you'd like to learn more, we'd love to talk with you. please feel free to give us a call here at Sandy Adams Radio. We can be reached at 770-736-2828. That's 770-736-2828. If you'd like to hear this teaching again or listen to other messages by Pastor Sandy, just visit our website at sandyadams.org or download our mobile app to stay connected to biblical teaching wherever you go. If you have yet to find a church home and you're in the Atlanta area, we'd love to meet you. Come join us this weekend at Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain for a time of worship, studying the Bible, and just getting to know one another. You can find service times, directions to the church, and more information at sandyadams.org. Just click on the church link under the About tab. That's all we have time for today. Join Pastor Sandy next time here on Sandy Adams Radio.